As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
It's Straight Outta Cobham, the show about Chelsea FC from The Athletic. On this episode, takeover confusion as Bowley bid gets the green light only for Jim Ratcliffe to make a late offer. There's the annual Goodison Park misery to reflect on, a crucial win for the women's team, and plenty more besides. Available for free wherever you get your podcasts and ad-free on The Athletic. This is Straight Outta Cobham. Back again then, folks, for the first of our bi-weekly dives into all things CFC. Joining me, Matt Davis-Adams, today are Dominic Fifield.
Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning, Dominic. Super Sam Parkin's back with us too. How are you doing, Sam?
Very good, Matt. Morning.
Right, so Sam, listeners to the Totally Football League show will know that you are an excellent dissector of footballers' tweets. I want to start today with one from a footballer's dad. This is from Mark Pulisic, since deleted, tweeted last night. The sad thing is, he loves his club, teammates and London, puts his heart and soul into being a pro. Onwards and upwards, my boy. Big 6 months ahead. Dot, dot, muscly arm emoji. How helpful would that kind of intervention from your dad have been during the Ipswich days?
I never had a bad game, according to my mum. She would have got both barrels, let me tell you. My dad probably gave me a bit more constructive criticism when I was younger, but... yeah, ill-advised, I would say, for family members to be tweeting about your situation at a club. But clearly that's probably due to conversations he's been having with his son or, you know, developments off the pitch. Got sympathy for him a little bit because we've seen in a Chelsea shirt, not for a while, that he's a very capable footballer. I think he's probably the main one that suffers because of the system. I really do believe that. I think if he could play wide on the left-hand side, you know, with a 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, he would be much suited. I just don't think he's as good as the other options as a 10 or as a wing-back, which I think is where he was deployed when he came on yesterday initially. And then Ziyech ended out there on the right-hand side. So I have a bit of sympathy, but, you know, since the injury, we've not seen the best of him.
This kind of thing, Dom, it makes good copy for journalists, but it also speaks to the general sort of sense that something's not right around Chelsea at the moment, doesn't it? And obviously the takeover is a massive factor in this, but it feels like things are starting to slide in terms of, I don't know, the management of the squad, maybe obviously the contractual situation is something we've spoken about a lot, but this kind of thing doesn't happen in a happy dressing room, I would argue.
Yeah, you're probably right. I mean, if you look at the bench at Goodison Park, you can go through all those players pretty much. And, you know, Kepa, clearly very much a second choice and with an unclear future at the club. Lukaku, we've said so much about him, where his future lies. If he can't get onto the pitch when Chelsea are struggling to break down Everton, then when is he ever going to get onto the pitch? Chaloba's sort of gone off the board of late. Saul's been as a loan move, just hasn't worked. And there's clearly a lack of faith there from the management. Kennedy and Saar, I mean, I don't need to say very much on those fronts. Pulisic and Ziyech have just become perennial substitutes who've come on. And clearly there isn't the faith from the management in getting them on, which has left a situation where as Liam pointed out in his piece this morning, 10 of the players that started the game against Manchester United on Thursday night started the game at Goodison Park on Sunday night. And for an elite club with what most clubs in the Premier League would consider real squad depth to their options, well, it's not being demonstrated on a weekly basis. And that's presumably because the management do not have faith in so many of those players to actually deliver for him on the pitch. And yeah, it feels like a rather fractious end to the season in terms of rather fraught end to the season in terms of what's going on the pitch. And that is increasingly reflecting, you know, all the uncertainty of it.
Yeah, we hope there'll be some good news in terms of off the pitch. We're going to talk takeovers next.
The breaking news in the last few minutes, the Todd Burley Consortium, which is backed most of the money coming from Clear Lake Capital, an investment company based in California, are the preferred bidders for Chelsea Football Club.
Right. A sensational development in the battle to buy Chelsea Football Club from Roman Abramovich. So Jim Radcliffe this morning has made, according to reports, a late bid, a sensational bid of more than £4 billion to buy Chelsea.
That thing where you record a podcast and then loads of stuff happens immediately after producer Lucy hits the send button. That was us on Friday, I'm afraid. It all kicked off in the afternoon. Firstly, reports leaked that the Stephen Pagliuca and Martin Broughton-led bids have been told they were unsuccessful. And then it emerged that the British billionaire Sir Jim Ratcliffe had tabled a late offer of his own. Matt Slater has written more on this for The Athletic. It's a really good explainer, so do check it out. Remember, athletic.com/ChelseaPod, the place to go to sign up if you don't yet subscribe. Dom, this Jim Ratcliffe bid is described by Matt, or he uses the metaphor of somebody gazumping you on a house move. Not illegal, maybe a little bit unethical, but I mean, it's incredible, isn't it, that this development has happened at this time when we're so far down the process. He must be serious to have made the bid, but why didn't he do it when everybody else was?
It's a good question. A couple of months ago, we're told that there was a sort of tentative inquiry as to how much it would cost, and he decided that it was going to cost too much to take Chelsea on 2 months down the line. The numbers just seem to have gone further through the roof, and yet now he suddenly comes out and tables this offer after talks with the Chelsea hierarchy last Thursday. He was in London, apparently, last week, and made those inquiries, worked out, you know, whether he was going to formalise his interest, and that went in on Friday, and it seems to have circumnavigated to a certain extent, Rain Group certainly circumnavigated their process, where they've had, you know, all the bids came in whenever it was a month ago, and then they've had this period where they've had four and then three consortia, and then that was going to be whittled down on Friday to the Bowley-led group with the Bowley-Clear Lake group. But he is serious, apparently, Jim Ratcliffe. I mean, he's still hoping to talk to various stakeholders, potentially including supporters groups in the coming days. He still thinks he's got a chance. And actually, I mean, in the intro there, you mentioned the Broughton and the Pagliuca bids. They're not off the table. They're not dead, because if the Bowley Clear Lake bid does not reach an agreement in this allotted time, which is about a week, then pretty much the system, the process is open again, and Rain Group look at the other bids on the table, which would now be back up to three more bids. It would be Broughton, it would be Pagliuca, and it would also be Ratcliffe. So I don't think we can be definitive about anything in the days and weeks to come, I'm afraid. It's gonna bumble along for a while longer, and we're gonna find out how serious Ratcliffe is, whether there's any appetite within the Chelsea hierarchy for that to be the favourable bid. And in the meantime, the preferred bidder status has been given to Bowley, and he has to convince all parties that his Clear Lake Bowley bid should be the one that they pursue.
Sam, you and I are occasional contractors of Chelsea, and I'm finding all this incredibly stressful. For Thomas Tuchel, I feel like this might be the last thing that he wanted, the news of this Ratcliffe bid coming in, because there needs to be some certainty and some clarity for those who are going to be sticking around for the long term. You know, we can say, well, it doesn't really matter to Andreas Christensen because he's off anyway, but we're nearly at the end of the season. You've got to start planning for next season before too long, and that's not even taking into account the fact that this special licence ends at the end of May and something has to happen by then.
Yeah, I agree with you. I still have the feeling that ultimately it will be sorted and Chelsea will be able to mount some form of challenge next year. But, you know, Simon's piece today or yesterday about the speculation about Mount and James, you know, these players that are, you know, not in their peaks right now, but playing for their country, they want to be challenging for honours. And of course, Thomas Tuchel is one of the main components of this club right now, and he doesn't want to be having a season of consolidation a la Frank Lampard with the transfer ban, even though he did wonderfully well that season. These guys don't want to be in a job where they haven't got the tools to challenge and get closer to Liverpool and Manchester City. I mean, 17 points is the gap at the moment from Chelsea to Liverpool or to City. And we thought they were going to challenge this year, so it's not been particularly good in the league. And next year, he won't want to be this far away. So the longer this goes on, the more difficult it's going to be for him to build a squad that's going to be able to challenge on all fronts next season. And more likely that we may see some of the lone stars that have been fantastic being around the squad for kickoff. And it's not to say some of those don't deserve it, but it needs to be supplemented with some quality signings, which I think on yesterday's showing, the club's in desperate need of.
I appreciate what you're saying there, Matt, about the uncertainty, etc. But Rain or Abramovich or whoever is ultimately going to make this decision is working for a long-term solution. And if that takes a bit longer over this summer, so be it, if it's going to guarantee Chelsea's long-term future. It may be that the Ratcliffe bid is the best bid for Chelsea. It's not the biggest bid by the sound of things. It's financially, I don't think the package is quite as big as the other three that were on the table. But it would probably be the nearest thing they have to an Abramovich-like figure. There's basically Jim Ratcliffe in control. It's not a syndicate. It's not a various different parties and in a consortium full of different voices. It would be the simplest solution in many ways. Okay, it's come late and it's almost treated the whole process with a lot of disrespect in the way that it's been done, but it may be the best bid. It might be. And if it is, Chelsea really need to look at it. They need to scrutinise it and they don't need to rush through something else if actually the better option is being ignored. I mean, when we talk about players' uncertain futures, Mason Mount's got 2 more years on his contract. Reece James got 3 more years on his contract. If Chelsea want to keep them in the summer, they keep them in the summer. They can't even, if they're still under sanction, they can't negotiate a transfer deal anyway to take them out of the club. It's unsettling and it might be a bit of limbo, but it's not disastrous because they've still got a future at Chelsea Football Club. They're still under contract. It's not like an Antonio Rudiger situation. And as much as it's frustrating, this is all about Chelsea's long-term future. And you have to think about the bigger picture as to what is going to be longer term. And I'm talking supporters here more than club employees who are reliant upon a wage in the short term, particularly freelancers. But that is the only way they can look at it. It's akin to a club in administration where, you know, that might lose... You might lose a couple of players. Well, Chelsea might lose Antonio Rudiger and Andreas Christensen and Cesar Azpilicueta. But if in the longer term they've got owners that will share the ambitions of, well, even the current ownership, then they'll be in a better place in 2-3 years' time for the little pause and the consideration that Rain Group or the hierarchy at the club give to all bids at the moment. That said, Bowley Clearlake is the preferred bidder. Bowley Clearlake have got the chance this week to convince everybody that they should be the owners of Chelsea Football Club. This is their opportunity to do
to make this process far simpler, because they can blow everybody else out the water this week. They can actually show this is what we want to do, and this is how we're going to do it, and this is why we should be serious. And then, you know, this time next week we might be sitting here with, you know, this, the takeover is now going to be smooth. It's going to go to government. It's going to get the green light. And in a couple of weeks' time, 3 weeks' time, 4 weeks' time, whatever, Chelsea Football Club might have new owners, and it probably will be Clear Lake Bowley. But I still think there's got to be an element of patience.
I just think the anxiety comes from the shifting goalposts of things like the Ratcliffe bid coming in last minute, of things like, well, now you've got to chuck another 500 million quid on for the victims of Ukraine fund and all this kind of stuff.
The interesting thing on that was, I mean, that perplexed me as well, but that's almost been born of a basic misunderstanding from somewhere in the process of whether Roman Abramovich can write off a £1.5 billion debt. And it turns out he can't. So to guarantee £1 billion to a charitable foundation, which incidentally still hasn't been set up, you know, that's you have to have a £2.5 billion pot coming in. I mean, that's just the peculiarities of this system. And it sort of shows how complicated everything is, I guess. But... and yeah, of course there's uncertainty, but it's not like a club going into administration or a club going into being liquidated. We're not talking Bury Football Club here. It's Chelsea. There are four interested parties still. Five if you count the Ricketts bid, which, you know, is still sort of hovering around there. I mean, there's plenty of interest in them. It will get sorted out. It's just a matter of going through a very complicated and difficult process to get it done.
All right, so finally on the takeover then, Dom, the other thing that's caused me anxiety, I think, with these comments by Nadine Dorries last week that it needs to be done. Do you think that if necessary, the government will just extend the sporting licence beyond the 31st of May just to allow it to get done, but get done properly rather than rush through?
Yeah, I expect it will, because it's not in the government's interest for Chelsea to go to the wall. I mean, the cynic in me says that would cost them too many votes in quite affluent parts of London as well. I don't see why they would do that. It's that they want this sorted out. So again, we're in unprecedented territory, because it doesn't happen with football clubs to become sanctioned assets of, you know, Russian oligarchs. This is all uncharted territory. But I'm sure if it comes to that on the 31st of May, as long as there's evidence that it's moving in the right direction and we're getting there. It can't be a case where we go through May and every single day brings out another, you know, businessman in tax exile, willing to throw money at the club. But it won't be like that. By then they should be well down the line with most likely Clear Lake Bowley to get it all done. It's interesting. The government's role in it all is interesting as well. And there's been a lot of talk about how the statement released by Ineos and Ratcliffe about this being a British club and this is being the only British bid would curry favour with the government, despite the fact that he quit the UK to go and live in Monaco as a tax exile a while back, and which isn't very patriotic, really. I don't think they'll fall for that. I don't think that will come into it particularly. I suspect that they just want to see this done, this process done. If anything, Nadine Dorries is actually, I don't even want to give her credit for that, because quite frankly, you have no idea what she's going to say whenever she opens her mouth, and most of it is debatable. So let's just leave her out of it. She said what she did on a BBC interview last week. It will get sorted, and if need be, I'm sure that if it's going to run into early June, that they will just extend the license to make sure that it all goes through.
Oh, for the simpler days of February, when we were wondering if Romelu Lukaku's goals at the Club World Cup were going to give him the kickstart he needed for the remainder of the season. All right, that's the takeover. Let's cheer ourselves up by talking about Everton versus Chelsea.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/credit card.
Simon's shaking his head. He's been
burnt. It's over. I'm calling it now. I've been at Goodison Park so many times and watched the same performance by both teams, actually. Everton playing a sort of very ugly, aggressive, physical, in-your-face, set-piece style of football, and Chelsea folding. And I'll be very surprised if there isn't a repeat.
There's a point, there's a really important one. Given away, though, by Villacrota, Richard! A gigantic goal at a Glenner Street end for Everton.
Simon Johnson there, predicting perfectly what was going to happen. Another year, another defeat for the Blues at Goodison Park, losing at the home of the Toffees, aka Frank Lampard's Everton, yet again. Richarlison's goal, enough to see off a tepid Blues side. Liam Toomey was there for The Athletic. He sent us this report.
First, I must apologise to the subscribers in my Q&A for this game who, prior to kickoff, predicted it perfectly. The phrase Charity FC got a few outings. They predicted that a Chelsea gift would lead to an Everton win here. The Everton win that Frank Lampard and this storied club so desperately needed. Lampard is in front of me pumping his fist, just completing a lap of appreciation at Goodison Park. And I said to the subscribers, you know, there's no need to be so cynical. Just because we've seen it before doesn't mean it'll play out that way again. How wrong I was. Chelsea certainly played like a group of players who had been kept up part of the night by a firework display. First half, they didn't defend too badly, but they certainly lacked Everton's edge. You could tell without looking too hard that this was a team that had nowhere near as much to play for. And then, as we've seen so often in recent months, start of the second half, they were asleep. And principally, Cesar Azpilicueta, the club captain, was asleep. A horrendous individual mistake. The type of mistake that Thomas Tuchel has been bemoaning for a long time now. Tilted the game, as it turned out, irreversibly in Everton's favour. It lifted this entire stadium, which had been pretty anxious up to that point, and gave Everton something to cling to. And from there, we got the show that we expected, you know, the time wasting, the feistiness. I thought Chelsea got drawn into the emotion of this game far too easily. Three bookings in the first half, all for various degrees of argy-bargy and afters with Everton players. Seamus Coleman was trying to set the tone, shall we say, for this game. And down the stretch, you got, you know, Richarlison going down with cramp. I thought Rudiger's decision to put the ball out of play really summed up Chelsea's mindset in this game. Just nowhere near what it needed to be, as ruthless as it needed to be. And aside from two incredible saves from Jordan Pickford in the second half, you rarely got the sense that Chelsea were going to find an equaliser. The ball wasn't in play much for the final 20, 25, 30 minutes, and for the 7+ of injury time. And you also got the performance art of Jordan Pickford stretching out his hamstrings, doing little flexes, crumpling to the floor with the ball. All the usual, quite entertaining when you're winning the game. The Chelsea fans across to my right had very little to stick around for, to be honest, beyond the final whistle, other than to applaud Lampard, which they did. This is obviously a massive result for him. the one bit of happiness I'd imagine that some Chelsea fans can take from this. And obviously a huge result for Everton. We've got one hell of a relegation battle in the Premier League now. But it's another listless display from Chelsea that really gives you very little to be optimistic about in terms of heading to the FA Cup final. Is there anything right now that suggests Chelsea will beat Liverpool or even compete with them in the manner they did at Wembley in February or at Stamford Bridge in January? I'm not sure, but we'll leave it there for now.
Very little to be optimistic about, says Liam. That fair, Sam?
Yeah, quite possibly. If that's the as near as the team that's going to take the field in the cup final, then yeah, it was a pretty desperate showing, I thought. I know there's some pressure on the league games now, and you know, if Arsenal and Tottenham can get their acts together and show the consistency to put Chelsea under real pressure, then there's still going to be some points needed to be won in the Premier League, which makes it a little bit peculiar that there was only the one change yesterday because of the schedule. I don't believe tiredness can be the largest accusation, but you know, I thought it was an opportunity to play a few different players yesterday, considering the time scale between games. And I thought it was really lethargic. You knew how Everton were going to start. You knew they were going to be incredibly energetic from the front, and they closed Chelsea and forced them into mistakes. And to be honest, that was the only way they were going to score. They lacked that real belief, that real creativity. I thought Everton in the final third. So handing them a goal was probably the only way they were going to win that game. And that's how it played out, albeit in the second half. So, yeah, I mean, speaking to Dom just a minute ago off air, really disappointed with the front two. I thought there was we've criticised Lukaku so often about his inability to move the centre-halves about. Well, I saw that in abundance from that front two yesterday. I thought there was a lack of desire to show for the ball. When Jorginho and James were kind of probing in the first half on the right-hand side of the pitch and they were looking for just a wall, just someone to bounce the ball into, those two didn't get over and provide that as they should have done. So really disappointed with them. It wasn't just about their performance, but yeah, I thought when Ziyech came on, he maybe added a little bit on the right hand side, a couple of step overs, a couple of decent thrusts forward, but in the main it was pretty lackluster. Although Jordan Pickford still, you know, was probably the pick of the bunch for Everton, making some amazing saves. I mean, you know, if I was a centre forward in the Premier League and I was playing against Coleman, Mina and Holgate, I would have fancied my opportunities of getting a goal or two. So, yeah, really frustrating from the forward players again. But I think Thomas Tuchel has got an argument to point towards the clean sheet and the individual errors, because they are stacking up. And if we talked on the previous pod about the difference in Man City's forward assets and Liverpool's trio of goal scorers and the inability for Chelsea to convert, then you have to look at and compare the amount of mistakes that the top two are making in relation to Chelsea's defensive players. I mean, there's been so many errors that have directly led to goals. Then that has to be a large reason as to why Chelsea are so off.
Just back on the other end of the pitch, Dom, Ben tweeted to say, is Chelsea's inability to convert possession into meaningful chances and goals simply a symptom of the Lukaku misfit, or is there something more fundamentally lacking in approach in the final third? It's been almost the standout issue of the season on the pitch, hasn't it? Trying to get a front three or a front two to actually show some kind of consistency. And it looked as though we were there a couple of weeks ago with Werner and Havertz, but that seems to have drifted away again too.
Yeah, as quickly as Timo Werner's form came, it's abandoned him again. He was very, very peripheral at Goodison Park. I mean, it's the movement definitely comes into that, and when they're in sync and they're fluid in their movement and they make the right runs, obviously they will open up defences as poor as Everton's have been, but they weren't on Sunday. They created 17 shots on goal in that game, but they weren't, other than that sort of flurry where Pickford's plucking saves out of the air, ether, they weren't really clear-cut chances they were creating. They weren't brilliant sightings of goal. It was half chances. It was
the type of chances that the majority of mid-table Premier League teams sort of rack up and think, oh, well, we've done okay today, when actually they've scored zero. Well, that was, it was a sort of a mid-table performance from the front ranks at Chelsea. And whenever that happens, you sort of, that yearning for a Cesc Fabregas type figure who can just, you know, provide a real visionary pass to open up a defence and create a really, really clear-cut, obvious chance, is that just gets stoked. You desperately need that, but Chelsea don't have that player. Their most attacking and free-flowing football this season has been achieved not with a creator in the middle, but with a threat down the flanks, with Chilwell and Reece James attacking and providing width and opening teams up that way and providing space in the middle that others have exploited. And Chilwell's absence shouldn't be underestimated. I mean, it's really, really hurt them. Marcus Alonso, I thought, was, again, just off it, like they all were at Goodison Park. James is clearly feeling his way back in. He can be brilliant on Thursday night and then off colour on Sunday. I guess that's the nature of a player that probably doesn't entirely trust his hamstrings at the moment. But the whole of the performance, I just thought, was just an angry mess of a performance. They got sucked into Everton's tactics that were so obvious that's what they were going to do. They did it at Anfield and it almost paid off for them there. But Chelsea allowed themselves to get wound up, and it wasn't, you know, it was players like Azpilicueta, who should know better, losing their heads. And when you see your captain doing that, it's no wonder that some of the younger, more impressionable players in the team probably follow suit and get rattled. And, you know, Havertz and Mount and people like that suddenly start picking fights with people who are twice their size and twice as likely to tumble, clutching their faces when they've had an ankle brushed. I mean, it was just such a fractious and angry occasion. It provided no rhythm for Chelsea to get into it at all, really. And God, if they think it was bad at Goodison Park, wait until they play Leeds away next Wednesday, because that's exactly the same scenario there. It's going to be horrific if they don't get their act together and start getting some focus.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to be balanced because 10 of these players won the Champions League not so long ago. But you think of Chelsea teams of yesteryear, that type of fixture. Is the speculation having a little bit of an impact on playing Rudiger and people that maybe aren't going to be there next year? I'm not going to go full Roy Keane, but you need real character for that game yesterday. I think people to roll their sleeves up, you know, Diego Costa, Drogba, Lampard, Terry, people that wouldn't have accepted going there and leaving without anything against a team that are clearly a squad that are clearly inferior to you. And for me yesterday, it was far too easy for Everton to get in the faces and Chelsea to get rattled and Chelsea not be able to show that composure to play through the press and have quality in the final third. I just don't think at the moment there's enough of the top players showing consistent performances. I suppose it boils down to not enough of the guys that have been really good in Chelsea shirts showing it week after week. You know, it's not good enough to be an eight and then be a four. Like, you know, Alonso, for example, he was brilliant at Old Trafford. One of his best performances, along with the goal, I thought his all-round game was great. Miles off it yesterday. And I think that could be said about, you know, that's just an example. That could be said about Werner, Havertz recently, and a number. I just think the consistency when you compare them to City and Liverpool. I mean, James yesterday, Dom makes the point. That's as bad as I've seen him. You know, normally he doesn't need, you know, countless opportunities to get that delivery right. He had opportunity yesterday to put the ball in. His quality was severely lacking. So I think sometimes you can, yeah, the tactics is really important and the selection and what have you. But sometimes that character, you know, to go to Goodison when you knew what was coming, I felt that with that yesterday, definitely.
But I suppose I'm trying to think of mitigating circumstances for it. And there is an element of drift in the league campaign. I mean, it's not going anywhere, is it? They've probably been so far
clear in third place for such a long time that there's maybe a bit of an element of complacency that they're pretty much sure. And I've been guilty of that. I still think they'll finish third. They'll rouse themselves for enough of their remaining games to secure third place. But maybe that element of drift takes an edge off the performance. Likewise, fatigue. I mean, it will, as Simon pointed out in the pod on Friday, they will end up playing 63 of their 66 available games this season. That's a lot of matches. And when you've got a game where you're going into it against an opponent who it means everything for, and it really doesn't mean that lot to you, maybe it's difficult to raise your game. I mean, Sam, you'd probably be better at answering that question, whether that is an element to it. I mean, it's probably no surprise that the one player that I thought actually offered something was the one player that didn't start at Old Trafford. Yeah. I mean, Ruben Loftus-Cheek was some of his driving runs were excellent, and what we want to see from him. But I mean, he didn't rest control. Don't get me wrong, he didn't like control midfield for any great length of time. But he was the one player that was offering a thrust from deep, and a goal threat. Actually, he had that good shot in the second half that Pickford tipped over. But maybe fatigue comes into it. But it was just. It was so predictable, really. That was the disappointing thing about it. And part of that, you have to look... And the manager shouldn't be immune from criticism on that. I mean, his body language towards the end was pretty grim. I mean, Liam makes a point in his piece this morning. I mean, at the end of it all, he's almost like a man resigned to this is how it's going to be. Well, he's got the opportunity to shift things if he thinks that there was a possibility of that rather jaded performance, then maybe make more changes. Maybe try something different. I mean, we go back to the Lukaku thing again. I mean, he'd like to think that if any game's going to get Lukaku's juices flowing, it would have been up against Everton at Goodison Park, but we'll never know.
Well, Chelsea still well set to finish in the top four. They are 5 points clear of fifth place Spurs. But if you add the goal difference into that, then, you know, it's effectively worth an extra point, as they say. And Chelsea's next Premier League game is against Wolves at Stamford Bridge on Saturday. The Blues not in great form at home, but Wolves not in great form anyway. So a win there, and it will be one step closer to Champions League football for next season.
This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Danilo Harder now has the chance to put Chelsea in front in one of their biggest games of the season. Harder against Ramsey. And that's an absolutely massive goal for Danilo Harder and for Chelsea in the race for the WSL title.
Elsewhere in Chelsea news, a big win for the women's team. They squeezed past bottom side Birmingham at soggy St Andrews on Sunday night. Pernilla Harder's second half penalty, the difference between the sides here, keeps the Blues' fate in their own hands. Beat Man United at home on Sunday and they will win the WSL for the third season running. Sam, it was a really difficult game, this, because of the pitch as much as anything else. But it's a massive win because Arsenal had won 7-0 earlier in the day to put the pressure on. But also, Arsenal were beaten at Birmingham. This is Birmingham, who are more than likely going to get relegated, but seem to raise it against the big teams. It's, you know, a massive cliche, but if you don't play well and you win, that's as good as winning 7-0 against Aston Villa.
Yeah, that doesn't matter now with just the couple of games remaining. Emma Hayes thought they were a bit edgy yesterday, probably with what's at stake. And, you know, they go into that final game with it in their own hands. So that's all you can ask for, really, at this stage of the season. And yeah, it didn't matter how they got the victory yesterday, just about getting over the line. And yeah, Harder converting the penalty to make sure that they can go into that last game optimistic that they've got the title after being, you know, pushed this year and having a very, you know, few competitive challenges, pushing them all the way.
That pitch thing, Matt, it was interesting that because it was Emma Hayes's post-match interview suggested that the pitch was dry, but actually when I watched in the second half, it was sodden and the rain was coming up when the water was coming up when they were passing the ball on it. So presumably the overhead conditions and it had been dry pre-match and it just made for this sort of rather bubbly playing surface that helped disrupt Chelsea's build-up play. But it just seemed like an exercise in attack versus defence from what I see until that really nervy period in stoppage time. And incidentally, when Chelsea's men's team start complaining about shithousery, if I'm allowed to use that comment, the Chelsea goalkeeper in the women's team, when the ball went behind in stoppage time at the end and she picked it up and leathered it out the stadium just to waste a bit of time. Well, that's pretty much the same thing, if you ask me.
Very effective from Ann-Kathrin Berger. We will do a big preview on that game against Man United on our Thursday show, seeing as it's so important. A couple of other lines from the women's team since last we met. Ji So-yeon has announced that she's going to depart Chelsea at the end of the season. Absolutely magnificent player. One of the best in the history of Chelsea women, and also in terms of the WSL as a whole as well. So she'll be sorely missed. But good news, as Frank Kirby tweeted this weekend, a picture of her seemingly at Cobham in her training kit saying, "I'm coming." Happy face emoji, muscly arm emoji, blue emoji. That's the kind of tweets we like to reach out.
Yeah, definitely. No, she's been brilliant. Very, very nice when I've met her as well on occasion. I think I saw her first Champions League goal and from that day. Gone from strength to strength, yeah. Brilliant player, good character. So yeah, with G departing, who again has been there, you know, from the very start. Well, certainly since I started covering the women's team, and yeah, she's brought such an amount of calm to that team. You know, in a variety of positions, she almost. I've seen her play such a floating role, you know, it's almost gets the ball off the back 4G and then she pops up with goals, free kicks, assists, and she's been the fulcrum. So that'll be a difficult player to replace, but brilliant news on the Kirby front because this season's been incredibly disrupted.
Not such good news for Chelsea's under 23 team. They went down to a 4-3 defeat at Blackburn on Sunday. This after Leeds had played their final game of the season, which was a 1-1 draw at Arsenal. It means that as it stands, Chelsea would get relegated. So they're second bottom. They're 2 points behind Leeds. Leeds, though, have played all their games this season. Chelsea finished this weekend against Spurs. That game taking place at Cobham on Sunday, a 1 o'clock kickoff. Sam, you mentioned before we switched the mics on, you don't want to have to be playing Spurs and having to win a game to win if you're Chelsea, because the motivation for the opposition is clear. It's got to be a win, though. And Chelsea have got six of them out of 25 games in the league so far. So it's far from a given. It's going to be a really tense occasion on Sunday.
It will be. The Tottenham staff might be rolling out the Eden Hazard goal, which scuppered their title hopes that year. Yeah, Tottenham won't want to do Chelsea many favours. I don't think, if my maths is right, a point at Blackburn would have changed anything. They'd have had to win that game.
There's 2 points between them, yeah.
Had to have won that game to be sorted. So, all to play for. And again, it's in their hands, but it's not been a great season. But, you know, with the likes of Vale and Hall and Wareham's had a good end to the season. Hopefully they can get it done. But yeah, it'll be a huge surprise, and it'll be a huge shock to many if they don't achieve it. But you know, this season has been tough for one reason or another. But it should be a cracking game, shouldn't it? And hopefully the players can turn up and produce.
You can play three overage players in the under-23 league.
Here we go.
Just get some ringers in on Sunday. That's what I'm saying.
Who would you put in?
Oh, they might not even be overage. You'd have Mason Mount and Reece James, wouldn't you? And then one other, essentially, I think, to win that game. Maybe Lukaku. Maybe that's the game that gets Lukaku back fit and firing. Not going to happen. Anyway, we'll let you know how they get on this time next week. Hopefully, they'll still be in Division 1 of PL2. The under-18s season kind of petering out in the under-18 Premier League South. They drew 2-2 in the Dom Derby against Crystal Palace. They went 2-1 up on 44 minutes through Lewis Flower, only for Palace to equalise in first half stoppage time. Tudor Mendel Idowu got the other goal for Chelsea in that one. That'll just about do it for today. Dom, what are you working on, please?
Title races, psychology of one team playing before the other, etc. How you cope with all that. There's a piece up, went up this morning, on Carlo Ancelotti and his 5 title wins in 5 different countries. With a section that I contributed on the Chelsea success from 2010. And I'm sure there'll be plenty of Chelsea takeovers as various other billionaires decide actually they do quite fancy buying the European champions.
We've alluded to Liam's piece, which is up now, on Chelsea needing clarity on the takeover so that they can revamp the squad in the summer. You can also read the piece that Simon trailed on Thursday with his interview with Josh McEachran. Sam, where in the wide world of football will you be this week?
I'm at Fulham tonight to see if they can finally lift the trophy and see what type of fettle they're in before Derby commences again next season. And I'll see Josh McEachran on Thursday for the start of the playoffs. Wickham Wanderers against MK, which is a bit of a derby in itself, I'm sure. Buckinghamshire? Maybe both Bucks. Yeah, I'll go with that.
Can I just take this opportunity to wish Matthew all the very, very best for the game at Bournemouth on Tuesday night?
My goodness me, I did appreciate you writing a piece linked to Forest's amazing success this season, by the way. Yeah, we're hoping it's going to be Chelsea versus Forest next season. We'll have to wait and see. By the way, that Wickham MK game, if they don't call it Big Bucks in some description, then Sky are missing the trick, really, aren't they? Enjoy that, Sam. Listener, cheer up. You know, they'll have new owners soon, Chelsea. Everything will be fine. Still champions of the world. It's okay. Join us on Thursday when we preview that WSL title decider, as well as the game against Wolves and the under-23's bid to stay in PL2. It's always a big week in the world of Chelsea Football Club, and it's no exception at the start of May. Many thanks to Sam, to Dom, and to producer Lucy, but mainly to you, listener, for joining us. We'll catch up with you again later in the week. Until then, it's goodbye.
The Athletic.